Well, I got your email, and you told me quite a bit about yourself in the email, but the time is yours. So some people like to use this to tell their story, but whatever you'd like to do with it.
Yeah, I've been preening down since scheduling because you can't talk about everything. And I've been listening to the questions you ask most people. And I think for the time being, it might be relevant to stick to how I got to Peterson. And that's kind of a little trip in itself. And I think if I diverge much past that, I might be putting myself in hot water with family. And
okay.
And then I wanted to ask, I know you avoid politics, but unfortunately my art school year was 2016. So should I
You refrain? Can talk about your okay. politics.
Okay, okay. Well, it's part of the whole thing.
Okay.
So about myself, I'm from Western South Dakota, and I specify Western South Dakota because we are a ranching community as opposed to farming, which maybe no one else cares, but we care. It's different. It's grass-fed cattle, not feedlotted. And grew up on a third-generation ranch that my great-uncle, although it wasn't as smooth as I thought when I was a kid, eventually, he sold it to my folks, but at a much lower rate than he would have to a non-family member. And then my mom taught the little tiny K-8 rural schools. And my dad did other stuff besides just the ranch because the little ranches just don't pull enough to live off of, really.
Yeah.
And one of his little jobs that he ended up with, we had a little old preacher that was preaching at a church of about, anywhere from 6 to 12, depended on the Sunday. Mm-hmm. And he had a condition where he was losing his voice. So he asked my dad to preach for him. And then my dad said, yeah, sure. And it turned out to be 16 years that he preached at that little church as a temporary pastor. kind of speed through that. So that was a very sheltered growing up, little... They call themselves non-denominational. I think my folks lean towards the Baptists because definitely no speaking in tongues. and then directly after high school, I joined the Army and I did 4 years. And the Army was because when you sign up, when you go to MEPS, they have you take the test. And I took the test, and it's a different kind of test than a lot of standard tests. And when I got to MEPS, they said, well, what do you want to be? And I'm like, well, I don't know. I thought maybe field medic or something. I don't get grossed out, so that'd be okay. You know, grew up on a ranch. And they're like, oh, no, you have to choose from these jobs. And I'm like, okay, sure. And they're like, well, do you like maps? I'm like, maps are okay. And I get to my secondary training after basic, and I look around and I think to myself, these are all the nerds. Wait, I'm a nerd. And I just didn't really realize it because there just wasn't like that group. There was like the rodeo kids and the kids from town and everybody else. That was who I had in high school.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that. I actually attempted to go to art school a first time in 2008, and I got accepted to Cambridge in England.
Oh, wow.
But I didn't have the money to go, not really. And it had never been approved by the GI Bill. So I was the one who got the art program approved by the GI Bill because I was the first one to ever attempt it.
Wow.
But I never got to go. I went for a month and a half. It was a fun month and a half, but anyway. And then that fell through with my first marriage, more or less. And I got in the Army a second time and did National Guard while I was doing tech support in Colorado. And then I was either going to have to be promoted or demoted really quickly because the Guard wanted to have people drill on when they were on orders, which is That's like a military. If you're on orders, you don't drill. And people had shook hands on that they were going to do it, but not how they were going to do it. And it was crazy. And I straight up had my first sergeant said, if you don't like it and you mess this up, you'll never get hired. And he meant as a civilian. And I was like, okay, we'll see. And I didn't renew my orders. And I applied to upwards of 75 positions throughout the United States and ended up going to DC for 13 months. And during that time, I got with who's my husband now. And then we moved to North Carolina. We were there all of 4 months and got a better job in St. Louis. And then I ended up at Southern Illinois School of Art and Design because I had switched jobs twice in a row. And we worked the same job, which meant we couldn't be on the floor at the same time. So one of us was on days and one of us was on nights.
Oh, boy.
And after doing that for 4 months and then switching again jobs, and I was just decided to use my GI Bill, and it had been from 2008 to 2015, and I still wanted to do art school, and I thought, well, I haven't got rid of it. So I went and I started out with a major in painting, and I came up across something crazy, and at first I didn't know what it was, and I just, the political correctness thing, I knew about it, kinda, but not really. And just the cultural difference. Anyway, I was feeling just nuts. And we were having things like teachers that wouldn't assign a due date, not really, because they'd sort of assign a due date. And then people like me would just do it, just whatever it took to do it, you know, 3 a.m, whatever, I'll do it. And then you get it done. And then 70% of the class doesn't have it done. And then the teacher's like, well, I guess that was unreasonable, so we'll just do it another week. And then I'm like, well, I'm done. He's like, well, now you have more time to work on it more. And so there was a real culture shock. And so I started getting on YouTube. And at first, I found Steven Crowder. That's who I found first. And I watched everything, everything. And I felt sane again because I was like, okay, it's not just me. There's something going on. And that's how I found Peterson. Peterson, I found him, I think it was right after the C-16 thing, because that's when he was on Crowder. It was not very long after that. And then I watched everything. I watched all of Maps of Meaning multiple times. I watched all the old lectures. I like the old lectures better. I like him when he's a little nervous still. That's my favorite Peterson. He's a little nervous. He reminds me of my family then. But one of the things that really hit me about Peterson that's maybe unusual, because I am from rural South Dakota, I relate to where he's from.
Yeah.
When he has one story he talks about when he's a teenager or early 20s and he's driving with his friends in an old car and they're wiping the window with vodka. And if the car stops, they're all going to die. Like, I'm like, yeah. Because I drove 54 miles one way to high school from when I was 14 on. And this was no cell phones. Like, you just did it, you know?
Yeah.
And there was a couple of times where I got to school. And after I got to school, the school canceled. But I had had to leave so early, they didn't know they were going to cancel yet.
Oh.
Because of snow, you know?
Right. Oh.
And I was driving a little Ford Ranger pickup. And what I would do is I would take cement bricks and put them across the back axle with a chain.
Give it some traction.
Yeah. So that was, I connected to him on that level. And then when he started talking about postmodernism, everything got better for me because I could recognize that was what I was upset about and not the people. Because the teachers, I wanted to like them, you know, because, you know, they weren't bad people, but there was something about the political correctness and about this. I have this theory. So postmodernism, one of the basis of is there is no truth, you know, because everything's a matter of perspective, which is sort of true, but kind of not. Well, in art, I think that because there is no truth leads to this, there is no objective beauty. And because there's no objective beauty, you get forced to prove it. Hmm. And so you're actually forced to make ugly art. And if you make something beautiful, they'll call it, oh, that's really saccharine, you know, that's just too sweet. It's cliche. It's oppressive. And same with anything illustrative or anything with a narrative. Basically, if it has meaning. If it has meaning, that's upsetting. And then I ended up taking metalsmithing because I really liked the teacher. And the thing about metalsmithing was it's constrained by physics. So you will be taught skills. And because it's so constrained by physics, there wasn't time to clamp down on subject matter. So I ended up taking my surrealist paintings and making them as tiny metal sculptures. And I really do. I love the skills that I learned from it. And someday I'll use them. But right now I'm straight back to 2D as soon as I left school because I don't have a workshop. Sorry, I've been writing and rewriting what I'm going to say.
It's very interesting. Even, you know, because maybe it's my own little art project, which is this channel. It's been interesting how the whole thing has even evolved in terms of, you know, people having that. Just over the last few days, I've had a number of conversations with people like, well, I've got all my notes down and I'm getting ready. And then after we do the video, they're like, oh, it went terrible. I'd say, no, it didn't go terrible. And I'll send them back the video. They're like, oh, I guess it wasn't so bad. So it's just,
I knew I had to write it down so I could throw out half of it a couple of times.
Well, that's wise. That's wise.
Let's see.
So you finished art school.
Well, no, let's go. I have to do a little, at least a paragraph.
Okay.
On Trump's election.
Okay, go for it. All right.
So while I was in art school, because I wasn't the only vet there, right?
Yeah.
So I'm assuming these other vets, they can't be buying all this stuff, right? They can't be just agreeing. They're acting like they're agreeing, but they can't be. And so I end up like side talking to some of them, and they just can't say anything because they're straight white males.
Oh, so they
one of them ended up completely quitting
and didn't complain.
Yeah, one of them just completely quit, and the other two, they don't know this, but in my head I called us the conservative cartel, and we would secretly meet far away from the art studio over in the cafeteria and just talk about how crazy we thought it all was. And then right after, trying to decide what's important, straight up had a teacher cry before a test after Trump got elected. She was asking us to walk out. She's like, if you guys need to walk out and just because of this, you can. It's okay. And I was so proud of everybody because we were just like, nah, give us the test.
Why would you need to walk out of class?
Why would you encourage it?
Yeah, it's just weird.
Yeah, and so that was, but then I decided that it was imperative that I come out to everyone as a Trump supporter, because I got it in my head that if they really thought every Trump supporter was this monster, it was a really bad thing. You know, because they're freaking out. These are
now. You're
kids.
Illinois, right?
You're Southern Illinois. Southern Illinois, right across from St. Louis.
Okay.
Because I just decided it was a really bad thing if they think they don't know any Trump supporters and they think they're all monsters that are now in control of the country. So I told through a project of mine in sculpture class, I did all these little meme people running away. And then this great big, it's actually this guy. He's my straight white male. And he at one time was holding an olive branch, but it didn't survive moving. And I said, so this is my piece, because this is how I feel, because I've learned about my internalized misogyny and that I'm oppressing everyone. And it was really hilarious, because when I said it, I'd let them look at the sculpture first, because that's what you do. And people actually pulled away from the sculpture, much like the little meme people that were running away from was crazy. And then I ended up with people like really confused and really wanting to either explain to me why I was wrong or just like trying to figure me out. And it became crazy stressful, which I knew it was going to be, but I figured, good God, if the freaking ex-staff sergeant can't tell people that they voted for Trump, who can? The guys can't, because, you know, so I just, anyway, it was funny because it was better and worse than I thought it would be. It was better with the teachers than I thought it would be. They didn't decide to chew on me indefinitely.
Yeah.
But it actually destroyed like what I thought were real friendships.
Wow.
And it blew my mind with people my age too, like people in their 30s, not the children were easier with it. Like the 19, 20 year olds.
Yeah.
They were easier with it than the people. And then there was a full on Antifa guy there that had to tell me about how violence was okay, which still didn't agree with. Also words are not violence. Violence is violence. But anyway, that was a fight I had with the sculpture teacher. And what else? Secret Catholics. Some of the
Catholics.
I had to put it into this part of the conversation because I don't want to accidentally identify them. But some of the professors that I found tolerable, They were secret Catholics.
I'm a Catholic. Don't tell anybody. I'm going to go to the People's Republic of China so I can come out.
I know. I felt so bad for them when I found out. I was like, oh, this is why you're sane still. Because it immunizes you to the madness. Because you actually have a faith. And yeah, so I don't know. And then... I don't know. I think that's probably enough about school. It's just so weird that I feel like I have to tell people, because I'm sure there's somebody else doing school right now. Like, is this really happening? Like, are people wearing double safety pins? The whole safety pin thing. And then if you won't wear a safety pin, oh Lord.
47% of voters voted for him. I mean, it's a lot of people. So,
well, and like me, General Mattis, like, the man is legend. The end. If he's cool with it. Like, and it's not like that was the only thought, but big freaking deal to a lot of people. And, yeah, like, I don't know. Anyway, and I'm not saying that he's perfect. I never did. It just, I actually was in the services when Hillary was doing things, and I actually know some of the things that happened and can do that. Nope. Anyway, so moving on.
So there's our Trump section. So anyone who couldn't stand Trump can now...
had to put that in the block. The people can rage as needed. I've already been there. Herbert will be there for you. So... Oh, gosh. Well, should I just jump into like the main Peterson things that have affected me?
Go right ahead.
Well, I would say a lot of his little tropes that he puts out, like do it poorly. Man, that's a big release, right? Because I had been struggling with the truth thing. I actually started trying to do the truth thing in 2010 when I got divorced, and when I first started trying to do it, it was definitely poor, and like I had just decided I had to do it anyway. I wish I would have found Peterson then and been able to integrate that, but I was doing it really haphazardly on my own, and like I just knew at a certain moment I absolutely had to quit with anything that wasn't completely real. Well, I guess I don't know if I can do this quickly, but I'll try. So my ex-husband, he had a fake dead child. For 4.5 years, he told me that he had had a kid the first time he'd slept with anyone in high school, and she had died of leukemia when, like, right before he got into the army. And that was not true. It fake dead child.
Why and did so, you make this story up?
Ah, right. Because, yeah, why would you do that? Because it garnered him sympathy.
Oh, and that would get
anyone.
Him.
Oh. Yes. And then, you know, if you're a raging alcoholic who's a little bitter, it doesn't matter because you're around everybody who's 20 and 21 and they're all stupid. And so they just believe you. He was 19 and 22. So that would be the one thing where I've developed a little bit of being more chill because he was also an idiot child. But good God. Anyway, so I got some like suspicion problems and everything, but yeah. So that was 2010 was a sharp turnaround for me because I had like one of the easiest lies to tell somebody when you're in a relationship is when they're like, I love you. And you're like, I love you. Cause you're forced to, right? You're forced to.
Well, you're not really forced to. You do if you want to, if you don't want a whole lot of drama. Well,
yeah, you're right. You're right. You're not really forced to. You think you are when you're stupid.
You say, well, you love me. Well, that's, thank you. You know, thank you. There's a lot of it, but it's just not the response that the person is looking for, obviously. Uh-oh.
Are we frozen?
Oh, now we're,
are we back?
I think we're back.
Okay. Well, there's the inadequacy of the word love, too, because I loved him like I love other humans. I loved him like I love a dog. Should that be how you're loving your husband? No. No, it should not. But, you know, anyway. What else from the things that Peterson really brought out to me? You only have three options in a relationship: to be the tyrant, the slave, or to negotiate. That was huge for me because I had this fictional idea of I should just take it, you know, and deal with it later or something. And it was no good. Let's see.
That in his book? I don't remember hearing that.
Oh, in one of his old college lectures. I don't know if it's Maps of Meaning or the other lecture, because there's the personality lecture too.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've only got three. You can be the tyrant, the slave, or you can negotiate.
Oh, that's
and that's
good.
Not just with like spouse relationships. That's
right.
Also with, you know,
right.
And
right.
It's really helped me because I was not somebody who just put my, like, I don't like to fight. It's not enjoyable to me.
So you found yourself being a slave often.
Well, and not just that, causing the other person to be a tyrant when they didn't know it.
Mm.
Because if you never say no, and if you don't share like what's true with yourself, and they can't know, and so you're creating these loops, like you're actually breaking reality, and that's how he talks about it. And I'm like, wow, that made sense to me, and I just wish I'd found it sooner, honestly, because I could have done it so much better.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then it affects my art, everything with Peterson, the archetypes. I had been trying to do that, to try and find the core story. Hmm. And I didn't know what I was doing. And I figured it out a little bit in art history because there's the personal mythos.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd gotten kind of close to it. And then when he started hitting on Jung and on Joseph Campbell, and then I realized that's what I've been trying to pursue this whole time. Hmm. And it was crazy awesome. Not to mention symmetry too, because there's a rejection of symmetry. They want you to do everything asymmetrical almost, seems mm-hmm. like. And when I figured out that the rejection is the rejection of meaning, well, of course, mm-hmm. you don't want symmetry because it all folds back on you don't want beauty, and symmetry is beautiful. And it's really crazy.
Hmm.
Yeah. So, did the no objective beauty one? Okay. So the schools, like the colleges and academia, have got like this overstack of being too liberal or being the crazy left liberal. Not so. I was wondering. I've been thinking about this. Did the churches get too much conservatism? And is that why you can't talk there either? And is the issue maybe not chaos? Maybe it's too much order on both sides.
Yes. Well, I think that's part of it. Churches, you know, part of, well, communities need order in order to function. And traditions need order in order to maintain themselves. And I think Peterson's got a good point to make when he makes the point that order can get rigid and order can basically petrify. And that's part of what happens in church. And it can become a function of fear that, you know, we have to maintain this order, otherwise we lose everything. And sometimes that's true. But that's what happens in churches too.
Yeah,
it's just part of institutions.
What I'm seeing with my peers, the people that still go to church regular either never experience the broader world or pretend that the broader world isn't part of their experience, so they don't need to talk about it in church, so you don't have to tip the ship, you know? And then the people who do want to talk about decide, well, church isn't the place for thinking. And they either become really agnostic or just spiritual or borderline atheist. And it's just really sad. And I feel like Peterson kind of uncorked the atheists that were still curious about the religion. Hmm. And I feel like you're maybe uncorking this bottle up that the church has had, because I feel like people have been really desperate to talk about their true experiences. Yeah. But when you start talking about your true experiences, everybody gets uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like when I talk about the fact that I never loved my husband, like you should love a man. Oh man. People are like, well, why did you marry him? I'm like, well, pressure and not sharing what was actually happening in my life with anyone. Yeah. And then doing what I thought was expected.
Yeah.
Because we got way too together way too fast. And then I thought it was the quote right thing to do. And then from my perspective, the only way to save my life was to sin. And how do you reconcile that? I struggle with it. I'm not as angry as I used to be about it. But I felt like the growing up in the church and growing up sheltered just left me unnecessarily vulnerable and then kicked me out into the world.
Now, when you say growing up sheltered, growing up in the church and growing up sheltered, what do you mean?
Almost no like R-rated movies. Like, okay. Well, I mean, we were physically sheltered. We lived 60 miles from any like town per se. Like, and then also like, you know, the wrong type of music will destroy you and kind of on and on. Like,
it's a pretty common list for people who are,
yeah, I mean, the standard churches. Really, which, and it's funny too, because in some ways my parents weren't like that, but in some ways they were more so. They were very chill about Catholics, where some people aren't. Mm-hmm. And then about science, my dad is very into science, although of course not evolution. Mm-hmm. Because that's a lie. Mm-hmm. Which is, I just don't care about it anymore.
So how's your relationship with your parents now that you've...
It's went up and down. I had about a year and a half, I almost didn't talk to my mom when I got into this honesty thing, because I was too mean about it. Uh-huh. And she wasn't ready.
Yeah.
And then it's kind of strange. My folks had to take care of my dad's mom, who got very intense Alzheimer's, like persistently worse and worse, to the point she was trying to scrape the house and hitting people and really bad. And my folks took care of her for the last 2 years. And my mom's trying to make everything work and trying to just say what you need to say so everybody can go along to get along.
Yeah.
It was too much. And she finally started having to get more real and tell people how she really felt about stuff.
Yeah.
And as that was happening, I tried to just be encouraging, but that wasn't like really me doing it. That was her. And since then, she's become more okay with me. But also too, I think for her, it was a big shock for me to not be the perfect child anymore. And I mean, like, I probably, like, I started cussing, like, I just wouldn't be like, okay, that'll be great. Like, no, it was done. I was radically done. Mm-hmm. And I really wish I would have just done it as a teenager. Because if I would have done it as a teenager, you know, but I didn't. I was great.
mm-hmm.
And that doesn't help. It doesn't help. I should have pushed through it then, but I didn't know how, or I couldn't mm-hmm. commit or something. Mm-hmm. And it really does warp the nature of reality. It does. When you're not doing your damnedest to tell the truth, or at least not lie, it warps the nature of reality, and it's a betrayal to everyone else. Mm-hmm. It betrays the confidence that you feel they have. And that's been something that's really shocked me, because there's a couple of people that other members of my family kind of dance around because they're really pious.
Mm-hmm.
And I've started being just as honest with them.
Mm-hmm.
And mostly they've taken it really well. Now we'll see if I get talked about to no end over the next decade.
Well, what
but
will you...
so far, no.
Well, so where are you at now with respect to church or God or Christianity, some of that stuff?
It's so complicated because I want it to be real. And I've always known, I knew even at my worst, I knew that the church was my people.
Mm-hmm.
And I would always go off and on. But I do have times where I don't feel like there's anything else. And I'm kind of at a point where, like, I would love to see angels or demons, and I can't. And people talk about when they're at their worst, and that's where God finds them and God picks them up. And I didn't. That was not the way it felt for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I missed myself as a child. Like, I miss the me that just hands down believed, hands down just didn't doubt or anything. Now, Peterson has helped me a lot because I've reassimilated, because if you're steeped in it, like really steeped in scripture, you know there's parts of it that are good for you, regardless. And it does feel right that it doesn't matter if they're supernatural or not, it should still work. And that's why I really appreciate what Peterson's doing, and it really helps me reappreciate the word. But also, understanding the church with history and with the broader picture
mm-hmm.
Has been big and completely new to my experience. I didn't get that as a child. It was like not quite just King James Version of the Bible and smile on, but close. Like, I guess the NIV was good too. Don't really know why.
It's a little easier to read.
But, well, I mean, if you learn on the King James, I actually understand the King James really well because that's what I learned on.
Yep.
So I memorized everything on.
Yep.
But now it's kind of funny. I really like what Peterson says about, but how do you act? How are you acting it out? And I don't know that I've ever acted out anything but a Christian life. Not really.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't avoid it. It's who I am.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I do sometimes just, I don't see evidence of other stuff, but then you want to, and you can see the serendipitous, if I'm saying that word right,
mm-hmm.
like you see things that are uncannily, like, that just happen. I'm actually playing with the idea of going to a Greek Orthodox church. I've been there for the last two Sundays, and it's funny, as much as I have doubts and conflicts and all this, my son is born, and the first thing I'm doing is singing him church songs.
Yeah, yeah.
Can't escape. Wouldn't want to do anything else either.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
So, but yeah, it's, I don't know.
How have you found the Greek Orthodox different from the Baptists?
Well, I mean, there's the liturgy. There's the chanting and the gold foil that's probably damning us all. But no, I really I really enjoyed learning about art in the church, and learning about the basilica and the meaning of all the things. And like, I love the visual and I love the symbolic, and the fact that that's like kind of stigmatized was always very vexing to me. And so to see that being used and to see worship differently is kind of really exciting. And I may have went a little bit for the spectacle, and I might not be quite done with that yet, because it's just beautiful.
Yeah,
it's just beautiful. And then I have an appreciation for ritual that it's just lacking. It's just lacking. When you bring out a little plastic communion cup that has a little plastic wafer in between the two pieces of plastic on the top, and you've lost all semblance of ritual, it's not as good. It might not be unholy, but it's not as good. And it makes me sad for the church. And then I'm very plagued that the church is so segmented. Because when I look at the sheer power, devastating as it may be, Islam has power. And it's because they're more unified in a way. Maybe they wouldn't say so, but it appears so to me. And we need that. Like, we need that power as a Christian church. And until we can sit down, I always was thinking to myself when I was talking, I have a really strong faith Catholic friend. She was a nun for 4 years. While I was in the army, which is kind of ironic. But, anyway, now she has 6 kids. But I've always was saying to her, I just wish there'd be a new Council of Nicaea and we'll just sew the church back together. And it's interesting. I attended the after service church meeting, and they're talking about the goals the Patriarch of America has. And one of them is as much reconciliation as possible. Wow. From the church. I wish I could have stayed for the whole thing. My boy got about 20 minutes is a long time for a 3-month-old. So I'm just trying to figure it out. I don't know. I'm not rejecting it, but man, like, I guess I'm just, that's why I said I was a Thomas. It's not that I don't want to believe. It's just, I don't know. It depends on what belief is a lot. And I like that Peterson won't commit, because it's like, I feel like to commit is dishonest. I don't want it to be. I wish it wasn't. But I feel like to commit is dishonest. But then what are my actions? And my actions are, well, I want to go to church. I want to be I want to do these good things. I can see where almost like pretty much anything that's labeled sin, I can see where it is devastating to your lived life. Regardless of the hereafter, it is devastating to your lived life. And so what am I living out? And so that's which is really interesting. I really like it when he comes at Sam for not knowing himself. It's funny. Here's a quirk I forgot when I was going on about Peterson. So some people, I noticed this in chat rooms with people, some people say they just hate the way Peterson talks because he's hyperbolic and he kind of is gritty and he's frustrating. He's annoying, basically, his annoying way of speaking. And I'm thinking to myself, man, I just don't get that. And they're like, well, on the other hand, there's Sam Harrison. It's so much different, so intellectual, so da-da-da. It's like Obama, da-da-da. And I'm like, wait. You think that's pleasant? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, oh man, this is part of it. I do not like Sam's voice. And I don't like the way he speaks. Not what he's saying, just the way he speaks. And I felt the same way about Obama. And the thing is, when I read what they write, don't hate it. Don't hate it. But it's just that way of speaking. And I think that is just a class disparity.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's really interesting because I don't know if you're tracking Sargon of Akkad, because you've got 1,000 things to track.
I haven't really been tracking Sargon. I know that he's running for office in the UK and people keep throwing milkshakes at him.
He's running for the office for the EU that he doesn't want to be in because it still exists. So he's going to run for it.
The EU?
Yeah, the MEP is the one for the guy that goes over to the European Union.
Oh, you've got to be kidding.
Yes. So him and Paul Joseph Watson and Count Dankula, or I can't remember Dank's real name, the reason they're running is because they don't want that position to exist.
Oh, my word.
And so they're running, like, as hard as they can because, like, if this position exists, we're, you know, so it's brilliant. But one of the things that he does is he says, do you mean alt-right or do you mean working class? Because I think you mean working class. Yeah. And that makes so much sense as, like, the difference, because it's just a different way of communicating. And the little bit, because I know, like, I get what people are saying. Peterson has a little bit of hyperbole and he talks in stories. But some people talk in stories, and that's what they remember.
No, you're very, very right. And Peterson is both an academic and can talk working class. And that, you know, I noticed that about him right away. So I grew up in New Jersey, and people might think, well, I just grew up, you know, 17 miles out of New York City. But Jersey's a weird state in that it's got rural and urban just right next to each other. And because of, you know, partly because of the Dutch Calvinist school I went to and the Dutch immigrants that went to New Jersey were, many of them were blue collar working class. And some of them still even had farms when in the 60s and 70s when I was there. So I think you're very, very right about class. And I think that's a big, piece of it. I think you're very right. Sam Harris is very urban.
And yeah.
Peterson.
Yeah, urban's the nice word. It's better than, so we just say he's from town. Oh, he's from town. Everybody know what you mean. Yes, he's very urban.
Oh, no, I think that's very right. I think that's
so, another thing, so I think one of the things that Peterson is doing, maybe Sam Harris too for that matter, I think they're maybe reshuffling the deck because there's the working class people that don't get mixed up with the academics, and then there's younger people that don't socialize with older people, and then there's the church people that don't socialize with atheists, and I think this is kind of, it's a maypole situation, and that's what I see when I see the Peterson thing, because it's not even that I watch everything he does now, but these little groups that fraction off of it and it just keeps going. It's just really interesting.
I think that's true. I think we're in a time where, you know, for a long time, people kind of take their assigned seats in the gallery and everybody kind of has their place. And one of the things with Trump is that we're in a time of a lot of mixture. So Trump was hated by the Republican establishment, but he won anyway, and he's kind of taken over the party. The Dems have their own issues in terms of the kind of the woke left versus the pragmatic working class, that a lot of whom have gone over to Trump, and they were Reagan Democrats. So there's just a lot of realignment going on, and that's a part of this, because, you know, I often reflect on the fact, I mean, when I talked to Jordan in April of 2018, you know, I asked him about this fast rise. He said, well, it had been building, but I thought, well, that there's, Peterson had been doing his thing a long time, and people had known about him, but there's something about the man and the moment kind of found each other.
The dam broke.
Oosh, yeah. And then everything changed. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, where this goes if Peterson continues to gain, or, you know, he just had that interesting talk with Milo on his podcast that I just listened to. That was fascinating.
I haven't seen it yet, but I am actually really glad. I'm really glad that he talked to Milo again, and I'm really glad that Ruben talked to Cernovich again, because people wanted to cast them out as the unruly children, but there are unruly children. Like, and we're the club that doesn't just drop you off the side of the cliff when you mess up. And so it really bothered me that they were sort of being ostracized by our side, even though I find Milo exhausting. It's not that I don't like him. I find him exhausting to watch for too long.
He is a bit much. I've seen almost nothing of him. And so this was actually the first time I'd ever listened to him in any extended period, but he is a lot.
When I was in college and he was doing the college tour, uh-huh. I really enjoyed it, because if you were in that stifling, like one day I got completely shut down because I was trying to remember the name of a female artist. And I said, you know, the chick that painted the chick that cut off the head of the guy better, because it's a really famous painting of when Esther sneaks back into camp and cuts off the head. And there's one done by a man where it's a little dainty chick and she's very delicately slicing the head, and her little frail maid is there to help her. And then the one where the woman made it, it's this kind of burly, like looks like a milkmaid chick, and she's wrangling him and her maid's on top of him, and it's like it's so much more like that. If a woman could take a drunk guy's head off, that's how it would be. It wouldn't be the little petite girl delicately slicing. No, that's but anyway, so I said the chick, and we had to shut down the entire conversation about my degrading female artists because of the word chick.
And wait, you were in trouble because you used the word chick?
Yep, because mid-thought...
You as a woman use the word chick. Yes. It isn't a guy saying chick. Yes,
that's my internalized misogyny. Oh. Yes, which is why I identify as an attack helicopter now. Because it's official. I had it officially on the college fill-out thing, because there's the... You can put down what you identify as. Attack helicopter. It has to be put. If there is anything besides male and female, you must put attack helicopter. It's obligatory.
Oh, well, we have a few more minutes, Sally. So I don't know if you got anything on your list that you just have to get in.
I'll put out a couple of weird things and then ask you a question. Okay. So one weird thing, because of the rejection of illustrative or narrative art in high art, I think that it's being pushed into video games, which is good because it's preserved, but bad because it's taken out of the world. All of that effort, all of that beauty is being driven into this virtual space, and people straight up take what is practically a pilgrimage to see, get this, cathedrals in video games, which is great. But then awful, because I'm like, why can't you just make that exist in real life?
Yeah.
And then the other thing is, the thing that I would ask you is, how do you get pastors or men engaged in the meaning crisis? Pastors specifically, because I was so elated to find you as a pastor that watches modern TV and has cultural references with people, and is engaged in this whole thing and understanding how it matters, because it does matter. I mean, especially young guys, man, they're desperate. And I mean desperate on the brink of death, desperate.
Yeah.
And I know it's a first world problem, but it's the problem that we have.
Yeah.
And I have been trying to kind of engage one of my local pastors, and he's interested sort of, but then he's also interested in, you know, the homeless guy and this guy and that guy. So of course he's got big issues, but he can't see how this is an equal issue.
Yeah.
And it kills me. And then just, I don't know.
Well, some of it is salience for pastors. Pastors deal with what's local in many ways. Which is exactly what they should be dealing with. The difficulty is that they can't deal with everything, obviously. So the homeless guy, pastors also tend to be directed by their congregation, that which the congregation thinks is important, because pastors kind of have to keep congregations happy or they lose their jobs. So it's complicated. There are pastors out there who are interested in this, but they're probably few and far between.
Yeah. If I wasn't at the little crossroads I am in my life, I would start a meetup here, but I just can't reasonably do so with kid under 6 months.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I don't have time for that.
That child is your priority right now. The child will not be this small and this young forever. So that's where you have to focus now.
Oh no, absolutely. I'm not even pretending, but it kills me because I do feel like we're on this crest of this wave. And if we can just keep it, if we can just catch a few more people, it's all the difference, I think.
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to see what comes. We are in a time of realignment. That's certainly true. Churches are funny things. You know, one way to understand, I mean, there's tremendous diversity in churches around the country. I mean, you found in your little neck of the woods an Orthodox church that you could worship in. That's an astounding thing, because I probably
I've been there two Sundays, so I'm mostly going to a meeting in a coffee shop with my beach pastor.
But it's churches in many ways. The diversity of churches in America in many ways reflect the residue of all sorts of past theological and sociological waves that have gone through the culture. And so depending on how big this wave is, there could be churches in its wake. You know, my whatever contribution I'm making on YouTube, that's part of it, I suppose. But we'll have to see.
It's a huge relief to feel like there is a church community where one can just talk honestly.
Yeah.
Even if you're not part of it, even if we would have never had this video, its existence, I think, is so, it's as important as Peterson. And I think a lot of things, like with stuff online, is it builds a lot of content and then something clips over and then it gets huge.
Yeah.
And I don't know if this specifically will get huge or some side thing from it, but that's kind of how I see it. That's kind of why I wanted to do the interview now, because I don't think you'll have time.
Well, you know, I've been doing this for what, a year and a half now, so who knows?
Yeah.
And it isn't so huge now that I can't still do this. There might be a day that I can't do this, but it isn't today. And so, and then to me, this is just fun, because here, you know, there's no way in the world I'd get a chance to meet you. And so there you are in Southwest South Dakota in a ranch.
I'm in Florida now.
Oh,
I'm stuck on the coast. It's really strange. Never wanted to come here. It's so hot. Oh, so hot.
Well, it's humid. That's the thing. Hot is
the beach is beautiful.
The beach is beautiful.
It's so hot.
But California doesn't have the humidity. That's why I love California.
Oh.
It's a dry heat. So
yeah, I miss out west. But
yeah. Anyway, Sally, this has been fun. I will send you this conversation, and you can let me know if you'd like me to share it.
Okay.
I think people will. I think
I'm pretty good with it. I thought about it a long time before
you're
we did it.
You're pretty honest.
Yeah, I'm trying to be.
And I like
just,
that.
Just enough to get in trouble, you know?
I would rather have a person be really honest and disagree with me completely than to just kind of snow me all the time. That's just a waste of time. So.
I tell people I don't have the apprehension about talking, but I have normal amounts of regret.
Oh, dangerous combination.
I know. I've never had stage fright, but I've always had normal amounts of regret.
Well, I will send this to you, and you can battle with your regret, and we will see where
I'll probably do it anyway.
Oh, good. Good. I think people will like it. Thank you,
Sally.
Thank you very much. Take care.
Have a great day.
Bye-bye.